if the man can maintain the brahmacharya throughout the life, then that's considered good. And if not, then the path of marriage then will develop the realization necessary for detaching oneself from the material nature. So then does this same, but we generally see in with the women that it's generally recommended they get married. But then if they have an idea not to, and they can maintain, is that all right? So just to answer a little shortly, because the topic for today will make things more clear. It means that there are examples in the Shastra of this happening. But as Srila Prabhupada told one of his disciples who lives in Calcutta, one girl, she decided she didn't want to get married. So he told her that it would be more difficult. And she said, yes, I know. And then Prabhupada said, all right, if you understand the difficulties that will be there, then fine. Yeah, so she's still there in Calcutta doing her service for the deities, still not married. You mentioned we would discuss today intelligence and how it works with the men, how it works with the women. And wow. So in the Vedic literatures, then intelligence is described as memory, knowledge, and power of discrimination. So basically we see that these also relate to those three levels of education that we talked about. Means memory then is connected with hearing. We hear different subject matter and we memorize that. Then the second platform then is that we contemplate. And by that contemplation we gain knowledge. So by performing service and combined with this contemplation, then we get knowledge. Then the next stage from knowledge naturally is then we get realization. So realization, then this is the power to discriminate between what to do, what not to do. So in the Vedic literature, then power of discrimination is considered the most important of the three. And then within discrimination, being able to discriminate between matter and spirit, this is considered the most important. What's good, what's not good, like this. So, but Prabhupada says, but this kind of, these aspects of intelligence are being addressed all around the world. He said, where is the university that's teaching how to discriminate between matter and spirit? This is our definition of intelligence, means discrimination between matter and spirit. Means the Vedic literatures are teaching, giving so many things to memorize, giving so much knowledge and so much discrimination within the material sphere. Out of all the different branches of Vedic knowledge, there's 14 branches, 13 of them deal with the material world, because that's where we live. And then one of them, which is the philosophy, or Vedanta, this is transcendental knowledge. So Srimad Bhagavatam is dedicated to that branch. So this is the Bhagavatam's definition of an intelligence, being able to tell between matter and spirit. It means other kinds of intelligence are discussed in other Puranas and other Vedic literature, but Bhagavatam's not dealing with that. The Bhagavatam gives the conclusion of all these other branches of knowledge and shows how they connect to the transcendental knowledge. So now, in this, we have to understand, so now, in this material body, the mind, intelligence, ego, they're situated in the heart, but they have to work through the medium of the body. Hmm. Like we have desire, but we have to take care of it through the body. Means, and that desire is connected. We have a certain kind of nose. We like to smell certain things or touch certain things or see certain things. We smell garbage, it smells bad. But for a pig, this is nectar. Like that. So in other words, we're restricted by the body on one level, one platform. Just an interesting point on this, on the material. I heard about a discussion about, I think it was in Malaysia, before the temples were kind of more established. Because it's a Muslim country, then they caught some devotees who were preaching, and this is not allowed. And either that or it was the parents were trying to, I think maybe the parents, because they're from Muslim families, the parents found out that the children were devotees, and they were trying to deprogram them. So they sent them to a mental institute. So there they gave all kinds of special medicines to try to make them forget. So this boy forgot everything, name, who he was, anything. Because then their idea is then they'll start from scratch, reteach him, and then everything's okay. One small problem. This devotee forgot everything, but he'd still chant Hare Krishna. They'd never experienced this before. That works on a different platform. So therefore, it means our facilities of material intelligence, and that does go through the mechanics of the body. As we develop that transcendental intelligence, then that's another story. That's how the Uttamadhikaris are transcendental to whatever the material situation that they're coming from. So then on this, then how on the intelligence works, we see that just in basic, we're not getting into details, but the fundamental principle. So basically in the brain, which does all the, how you say, digesting of all the thinking and all that, then it has two halves. So one half is mainly dealing with analytical powers, and one half is more with emotional and arts and fine things. So that means one side basically more is hard or cold, and the other side is more pleasant, more warm. The interesting thing is, this was all, how this was understood, is that they were having a lot of difficulties in the West trying to figure out why, marriages and other things weren't working so well. So by taking, they would do these different things, CAT scans and other kinds of things, and they would understand that the brain would work in different parts for different functions. So in doing this, then they found a very interesting difference, that the way that the brain in the men worked was very much different from how the brain in the women worked. So it was seen that on the men's brain, that they would function in one side or in the other side, but not in both. Well, it was seen with the women that both sides of the brain would always work. So now if this is understood, it's just a matter of how the intelligence functions. This creates different nature in thought patterns and dealings. And if we understand this, it makes it very easy to work within what we were discussing about of the Naistika Brahmachari, Upakurvana, the Grihastha Brahmachari, or as Mataji just asked about if a girl wants to be a Brahmacharini or if she feels better to get married. So now, the way the pattern of thinking works then creates strength and a weakness. So in the man, this means if he is being analytical, he is very strong. Of course, at this time then, it may be perceived that the men become very cold or hard-hearted. So, and weakness will be as if the man is on the emotional side. Because that means he doesn't think. He becomes passionate, he becomes interested in the senses or some, ism, and they'll do anything. Like we see, there was I think it was Edward II? In England, he was before the present queen. May have been the father of the. So he liked this lady from America, but because she had already been married before, to marry her he had to give up his throne. So when that side is strong, then that is the weakness. And now this brings up the point is why in the Vedic literature then we start with Brahmachari life. As we mentioned, the child's at home, he doesn't think. He just eats, plays, runs around, and doesn't think where it comes from, why it comes, how hard the parents have to work, nothing. It just is there, he runs around. So he's just dealing in the emotional sphere. So then the idea is then they go study with the teacher, then that switches them to the other side. And then that was what whole discussion, what we described about going through the levels of consciousness, the anamoy, pranamoy, like this. So they can distinguish what is matter, spirit, these things. Generally, we'll see that the boy then functions best in this atmosphere for developing his intelligence. So that is the reason of the Brahmachari Ashram. So when they become very strong in that fixed, then they can be very careful about allowing the intelligence to go to the other side and make some mistake. So there, we mentioned, then if they can distinguish between material rasa and spiritual rasa from that analytical platform, and there's no attachment to the material rasa, they can remain as a naistik brahmacharya. But if that is not there, it's harder to distinguish, or there's not that distaste in the material rasa. So then, as we described, then through the process of marriage, then one gets to see personally the material rasa, and one can then distinguish, yes, there's definitely a difference between this and spiritual relationship. So as we discussed, that means the man can remain brahmachari if he can remain in that analytical atmosphere. Living entity is by nature ananda. That means there must be relationship, there must be rasa, there must be emotion. Get that from the devotional activities, from the study of the scriptures, working with the devotees. And if that is there, then one can feel, yes, they can be confident that the naistika brahmachari ashram, that is going to serve the purpose of going back to Godhead. But if we find that that emotional side has to be addressed, then we have to take a different path. So then, but as we pointed out, on the emotional side, the man is weak. So now, how he'll become perfect on that side? By taking, addressing that side. Now, we will address the nature of the women. So we see that by the way the intelligence works, then where the man is strong and where he's weak, the women is exactly the opposite. So this means that if we are looking at the emotional side, then because both sides of the brain are working, emotional and analytical, in that emotional field, the woman still can analyze and think. But then the weakness is that if we are on the analytical side, we can see, yes, this is what should be done, but the emotional side is there, so then, oh, there's this and that. We should do this, but then there's this consideration and that, and this one might think, and weakness comes. So then this means that when the man, he's too emotional, then the woman, because she's in the emotional field, can relate to that emotion. So then this means that she can still analyze what is right, what is wrong. So based on the principles of dharma and religion, then the wife can push the man back into the analytical side. Means, or Prabhupada translates, the religious wife. Is that by nature, the mind likes ritual. Because the ritual then gives some form. Otherwise the mind just goes anywhere and you go crazy. So this is the first instruction that Kapila Muni is giving to his mother. Because of this emotional platform being stronger, the mind then is naturally stronger, then very much it likes the rules of dharma. Prabhupada mentions that we see in India, generally we see anywhere in the world, generally the women are more religious by nature. So this comes naturally. It's not so much a matter of convincing. It's a natural affinity. So Prabhupada makes a point. Because of this type of intelligence, they are more religious. So if the one is trained properly in this way, then a girl is trained properly in the religious principles, in the devotional principles, she doesn't like to deviate from those. Well, we see because of the man's analytical nature, basically he has to be convinced. He has to think this, that, yes, okay, it's good, then he'll do it. So it's not as natural. He has to really think about it. So therefore, if for some reason he leaves that analytical platform, then the wife by nature, because of her religious mood, doesn't want to see things going properly. So she will push the husband back to the proper standard. So this is, I don't know if I said it before, but this is what in the chapter in the Bhagavatam, then it describes the wife as a fortress. So then on the other side, then the husband, he is known as the Guru Pati. So then on the on the inverse, then if the wife becomes overly emotional or in making a decision, even though she can see what's right and wrong, because of the force of the emotional side that's also working, then the husband, by adding in his analytical position with hers, that can overpower the emotional aspect of the wife. So then, this then gives that support or help for the wife. So that girl who wants to remain as a brahmacharini, then she has to be able to cultivate that analytical ability and basically to stay off the bodily platform. So just as a naistic brahmachari cannot identify himself as a man, he has to identify himself as the servant of the Lord. Same way as a brahmacharini, she would have to have that same mentality. Means one cannot have the desire to taste these material rasas. One has a desire, then man needs woman, woman needs man. The man is 50% complete, woman is 50% complete. Religious way, then you get 100%. And as we discussed, then the husband can help the wife advance, and the wife can help the husband advance. Therefore, to remain as a naistika brahmachari or as a brahmacharini, one has to have that being fixed, that just by the service, by that association there, that one gets that taste and one doesn't need, one is not overwhelmed by the habit of having had that kind of association for unlimited lifetimes. So then this will just answer the question that why it's more recommended for the men than the women. Because the men, then being in that analytical platform, is easier to stay there, especially with the association of other strong men. It's easy to stay there. But for the girls, then because of the emotional side also being there, then they have to actually be very, very strong and determined to get through that constant washing of the emotions. Therefore, it's not as so recommended. That's why Prabhupada told that girl, it's difficult. But it has been done. It means in the Vedic literature, Gargi, she is an example of such a girl. She was not living under the protection of the father or the husband or the son, but she was just a, you know, wandering devotee. Baladeva Vidyabhushan in his Vedanta Sutra commentary gives her as an example of the Ekanki Bhakta, or the devotee who is off the bodily platform, the Uttamadhikari. Dhruva Maharaj was given the example as the third class devotee, means the Kanista. I forget who was given as the second class. Someone knows.
Dhritya Sarir Bhakta, or second class Bhakta, like Maharaj Maharaj.
Once one gets to the platform, when one doesn't identify with the body, then life becomes a lot easier. So the difficulty is just getting from the platform that we're at now up to that platform. So in this, then we see that we've discussed the naistika brahmachari, we've discussed now the grihastha brahmachari. So that means that brahmachari who, analyzing all this, feels that the best situation is going to be getting married is the upakurvana. He understands that, well, if I'm going to be successful in household life, I have to be fixed in my consciousness, I have to have controlled senses, I have to be able to analyze the difference between matter and spirit. Otherwise, I will not be able to help myself, I will not be able to help the wife, I will not be able to help children. And also then the intelligent girls, they're looking for those boys that have that training, so that they can also be helped. So in the Vedic culture, then that is why the brahmacharis were one of the five kinds of entities that were protected. Means the women were protected so they could develop that natural religious mood and that devotional mood. And then the brahmacharis were protected so that they could properly develop that analytical ability and strength in understanding transcendental subject matter. Then if there's a marriage between such a boy and such a girl, then you get first-class progeny. That was Arjuna's complaint. If all the kings are killed, the women won't be protected, they won't develop the proper attitude, they'll be taken advantage, exploited by unscrupulous men, and you'll get useless population. So there's a natural respect and a natural, more a proper working relationship between the brahmacharya and the grihastha ashram. But it's not based on the emotional platform so much as the understanding of the social structure and the proper respect for each other's position. So, on yesterday's discussion, then this means that the brahmachari who can remain as a brahmachari, then he has respect for those brahmacharis who get married, knowing that their purpose is to come to the transcendental platform. Means, and the grihastha has respect for the brahmacharis because this is the platform which either they'll remain as brahmacharis or this is our future grihasthas. Properly, if they don't become fixed in their vows, then they won't become a good grihastha. So therefore, Prabhupada says, first-class brahmachari makes first-class grihastha. So then there's a natural respect there. In other words, if we are working on this platform, understanding what is going on, then no one is worried, no one will criticize another devotee for whichever position they situate themselves in the Varnashram. Because if you have the same goal, you're getting the same goal, then what is the problem? So if there is a friction, then it is due to ignorance. Because the grihastha knows, he doesn't tell the brahmacharis, oh, why don't you be honest? You really should be married, this, that, you know, why quit making a show. Because that means we don't understand that unless that brahmachari becomes first class, he's not going to become first class grihastha and he's not going to have first class children. Therefore, the grihasthas will also try to help see that the atmosphere and the facility is proper so that the brahmacharis get properly trained. Only then they'll become good grihasthas. And the brahmacharis will not criticize those who have gotten married because that is the path how they're going to break their detachment. Otherwise, then it's just criticizing something that's within one's own heart. Gets married, not that the idea is to just become a sense enjoyer, but the idea is by this path, I'm going to break my attachments to the material existence. It's like Prabhupada tells this story. I'm sure we all know the story. The story of the Pukka Brahman and the prostitute means that once there was living next to each other, in two houses next to each other. One was this Brahmin, did all his pujas, everything, very pukka. And next door, there was a lady. Somehow or another, she was in an unfortunate situation and she had to make her livelihood as a prostitute. So then, he got so disturbed, he thought, I have to do something about it. So he said, I will show her how bad she is. So then, every time some man would come to visit her, he would go and put a rock in her front yard. So then, after some time, there was a very large pile of stones. So in this way, then, both of them, went on until their life ended. So then, this prostitute, she was a devotee. And she always used to think, I'm so sinful that I have this lifestyle and all this. She was feeling very unfortunate. So at the end of her life, then she went back to God. And the Brahman, because he was always thinking of this prostitute, he went to hell. So it is no use being the fired up brahmachari and then always, these grihasthas, this, that, so many different things. Mind will always be thinking of that. So that's not brahmachari. He should be thinking of his service and other things like that. So we can see it is only due to ignorance that there is this friction between the grihasthas and the brahmacharis. Otherwise, the natural position is the grihasthas have great respect for the brahmacharis because of their service, because of their austerity. And the brahmacharis have respect for the grihasthas because they're senior to them, they're mature, they can give direction, they take care of so many things, just like the parents take care of the children. Because unless there is this understanding in that, the body, the Varnashram body, cannot function. You try it. You decide that your arms will go one way, your legs will go another, and you see what happens. So Varnashram works because there's knowledge, there's understanding. Means one has to understand what is one's own positions are. Right? In the Srimad Bhagavatam, then Varnashram Dharma is being spoken by Narad Muni, who is a lifelong brahmachari, to Yudhishthira Maharaj. Not that Narad Muni is a brahmacharya, doesn't care for anything else. He understands the whole body. The grihastha also has to understand the whole system. The vanaprastha, the sannyasi, everybody has to understand the complete body. I was reading in his book here that Prabhupada's describing varnashram. He says, you just study your body and then you can understand how it works. The hand puts the food in the mouth. It doesn't try to, you know, enjoy it itself. Stomach may think, I generate all the energy, all the everything. Everything comes, but he has to give it away. Everybody takes it. Prabhupada gives the example is that if something comes to attack you or something suddenly comes, immediately you put your hands up. This you can understand. What's the relationship between the whole varnashram system? Some questions on this? Yes.
And then emotions. And I'd like you to comment on an idea that I have, an understanding that I have developed, and whether it has a basis in to be looked at. And that is that there's, just like there are modes of nature for passion, ignorance, passion, and goodness, that in the emotions, there's sort of a progression of emotion from the lowest basis emotions, which are very passionate, anger and envy and so on, up to what you could call love in the material sense, in which is perhaps best seen in the love of a mother for a child. Compassion, sympathy, these type of higher emotions. And that we find that men don't develop those emotions as well. And so it's more difficult for them to go to the highest emotion, love of Krishna, from their sort of, you know, cold analytical level, where their emotions are all very base and not very refined. And that through Grihastha life, they actually get an opportunity to elevate those emotions, and that helps them to go further. So is that any basis in that?
Mm-hmm. So the basic principle would be correct, but there would be a few aspects that we would have to not necessarily temper, but means if they're not considered, it might not happen. Means there's a few considerations. If they're not there, then what he's discussed might not work. Because there's many things, but I'll try to pull it together. Because one of the things is the platform of the consciousness. Because consideration of others is only starting from pranamoy. Anamoy is the platform basically of the senses, of the emotions, but where Prabhupada gives the example that the mother's love for the child is coming, you know, as close as you get to like pure love, because it's moved from anamoy to pranamoy. The care is for the other.
Loving the child is pranamoy.
The mother's love for the child is because it's pranamoy, because it's for someone else. She's working not for her own, but for someone else.
Mother's love is anamoy.
But otherwise, if one's selfish, that love is anamoy. It's very fixed in coming to that platform of anandamai, then naturally one can develop all the other levels below that. Train nicely as a brahmachari so he can distinguish these, and he becomes fixed on the idea of the anandamai. Then in that grihastha situation, then it will be very easy to refine the emotions and develop those qualities. But at the same time, that's only 50% of the equation. The other 50% is the wife. So that means then the wife has to be also fixed in this mood of religious principles. All the ladies are getting up and going away. So therefore, then for the girl, then the Vedic training is always pushing towards that platform of Dharma. We didn't get into so much detail on the ladies, because I was saving that for when we discussed the Grihasthas. But basically, if they have developed that mood, then that will happen, because then those finer sentiments are there, and emotions are there in the wife. Then with that, then that will refine the more grosser tendencies of the man because of the analytical side, the coldness. Therefore, the boy is very careful to see the character and qualities of the girl. Because of this nature of analytical or emotional, the boy has a tendency simply to look at the body, just to look at the body. Yeah, it means he thinks, yes, this, but if he decides to get married, generally he flips to the other side and he just looks what's the best looking thing around. Is typically known as the fever. So that the point is the Upakurvana Brahmachari, he approaches it from that analytical platform. He knows, I should get married, what marriage is for, what are the things, so then what is the proper girl that will make the proper partnership that we can progress back to Godhead. In the same way, the girl will look for a boy who's properly situated, has proper understanding, knowledge, proper strength. So in this way, in the Vedic culture, boys wouldn't settle for second-class girls, girls wouldn't settle for second-class boys. Because the outside, the look, then doesn't last so long. And that great attraction, emotional attachment, lasts even less. So therefore, the real marriage is based on duty. Means it's based on the principle that the husband and wife help each other go back to Godhead. Simply the physical attraction, that's for the animals. It's not actually meant for the humans. And especially for the Vaishnavas who want to break the attachments to the material world and go back to Godhead, then they have even less interest. Is that... Ms. Mataji? The principles I was talking about of the man and wife helping each other, then those principles also aren't those available like preachers helping, you know, others who are dependent and things like that. So of course that's there, but because we are basically talking about the Brahmachari Grihastha, I would present it in that light. Because you also have the other aspects, because men can be either sons or fathers also. And within fathers, then we have uncles, grandfathers, like that. So many moods are there. Huh. And then with the women, then you also have the aspect of daughters, mothers. So, I mean, there's much more. That'll come out more when we move to the next. See, it's like when you have one subject and you study it from different angles, you're dealing with the whole, but through that one angle. Just say we take one subject, or let's say we take one object. I think we did this before, but you have this glass. Now we can study this, let's say, by its volume, how much it can hold. So that's only part of the glass. But because of the glass is for holding liquid, this, that, for drinking, you know, then it will make how big it is. It won't be this big if it's for drinking. You know, it won't be this big. So it limits its size. You understand? So in one subject that you're dealing, then there's the other thing, its shape, what it's made out of, these other things. So you have to study all of it, then you understand the glass. So we've just started, so we can get a general idea, but we won't even fully understand Brahmacharya Ashram until we've also discussed the Grihastha Ashram. So it has to be all, but our main focus was on this as the first step. We've just now discussed duties.
Yes. As you were discussing earlier, the, I'll say, psychological composition of men and women in terms of intelligence and emotion.
not intelligence, analytical ability. I'm saying that both these together is intelligence.
My question is, in general, what is the proper balance for either side? And then specifically, how does one determine proper balance for himself? Analytical capacity.
Oh, I see.
Generally, when we say balance, then that basically answers our question. How far one is developed, the other one should be developed. Otherwise, if we find one is developed more than the other, we say that the person's not a balanced personality. They're too cold, they're too emotional. You know, like this, we get this. Basically, as much as one can, like, analyze, then generally that is how deep he can actually go into the emotional side also.
And how does one develop, what is the process for developing the weaker side?
Basically is learning how to deal and work with other devotees. Means how to avoid criticizing devotees, how to appreciate their good qualities, how to consider others, you know, feelings, needs, desires. If a man can develop that on his own, then it's fine. But he's not forced to, because by nature he'll be a loner. In the Brihastha ashram, then one is forced, that one has to consider the wife, has to consider the children, and one has to extend oneself in that way, like that. So if we don't get by hearing, then we get by this process. So the intelligent person they see their position and understand how to properly develop. Means what will be the best position for them. And we can't separate this from the point of the devotional development. That has to be the goal. Otherwise, you know, Varnashram is going on. Actually, it's going on all over the whole universe. It's only this small, out-of-the-way corner that there's a little bit of problem. So they're all following very nicely, but they're not going back to Godhead. That's the word, Bhagavad Dharma. Is therefore Bhagavatam presents the whole culture, but from its direct connection with the Lord. Therefore, it's called Bhagavad Dharma. It's not even. It's the next step of Varnashram. Bhagavad Dharma means following the devotional principles, the social principles, with the purpose of pleasing the Lord. So it's Srila Prabhupada ki jai. And then, so this we've seen in many times Prabhupada has discussed. But in this particular purport, then Prabhupada also mentions two other qualities. And that is the point that the boy is also, the boy is trained to be sensitive to and take care of the needs of the wife. And the girl is taught to be satisfied with whatever that the father, the husband, or the son can provide. So the brahmachari, or both, they're trained in this principle of how to take the consciousness off of the senses. So both the boy and the girl are trained to be able to restrain the senses and to concentrate the attention on spiritual values. And then the boy is taught in the austerities or the simple lifestyle, because in this simple lifestyle then they are able to properly fix their mind on spiritual values. And the girl is being trained in the principles of dharma or the religious activities or how to fix the mind in one place. So then this naturally gives rise to the second qualities, the next point. In other words, a boy cannot be worried about others if he hasn't controlled the senses. So for the naistika brahmachari, then that specifically means to worry about others for the preaching, for working for others' benefit. And then for the upakurvana, this means that preaching spirit is there, but at the same time, that practice is necessary, how to become sensitive to the needs of the wife. If the senses aren't controlled, then it is not easy for them to come out of the desire to take care of their own needs. So that sensitivity, that has to be developed. And for the girl, then unless there's chastity, unless the mind is fixed in one place, then we cannot have satisfaction. Because if the mind is not fixed, then the tendency will be to be selfish. And so satisfaction cannot be there with what she receives. These two points, these two principles, are the basis for the marriage to work. They sound very simplistic, but if we look at it, why a marriage will fall apart, it is because of these two things. It means there's a lack of sensitivity on both sides. The man will just take care of his own interests and ignore the needs of the wife. And the girl will be simply worried about her needs and will be pushing the man to bring more and more facilities. Means a person only has so much ability. Because when we work with the material nature, I mean, we're either getting what we deserve by our karma or what Krishna wants to give us. There's not a third path. So it is only foolishness if we think we will get more by another means. So if the girl understands this from a very young age, then life becomes very easy. Because the next step is to understand it is Krishna who's controlling, Krishna who's providing. Because that's one of the symptoms of surrender, is understanding Krishna is our maintainer, Krishna is our protector. And if we don't see that, then that means we're not understanding the philosophy. And that will mean our endeavors will be unnatural. So much, he will get so much result. And if we want to foolishly try to get more, then there's only one way we can do that. That means we have to take time away from spiritual life, means don't chant, don't read, don't go to Mangalarti, all these things, don't go to Bhagavatam class, and then spend that time trying to get more facility. Then we can endeavor, but still we will not get anything more than we deserve. Because we cannot get more than we deserve, no matter what we do. But what will happen is then the husband, then he loses his spiritual strength. So then that means, as we discussed yesterday, that the man will not be able to work properly on the analytical platform, at least not in spiritual. Only out of sentiment he can work so hard. If he thinks about it, he'll think, why I should work so hard. So then that means that the purpose of marriage has been lost. If the purpose of the combination between man and woman is for the man to help the wife in this analytical field, then that has been lost. So then if the wife has more desire than what can be provided, then that means the husband cannot actually perform his function in the marriage agreement. So then this means the modes of passion will be, if we follow this, the modes of passion, the modes of ignorance will be reduced. And then then in that, situated in that mode of goodness, then on the platform of duty, then things go very peacefully. And if we don't, that means we want more, that's the mode of passion. We think we can get it, that's the mode of ignorance. We're not understanding how the modes of nature work. Or that we don't understand how Krishna works. So then then it becomes very difficult. And on the other hand, if the boy is not sensitive to the needs of the wife, then he's not taking that endeavor to try to take care of the needs. So his nature will also stay very miserly, or very self-centered. So if we look at it, you generally will find that the breakup of marriages comes down to these two things. So this is the training, the main training for the boy and for the girl. Unfortunately, you missed the first part. Ganga had two questions. One was, how do we understand how much we endeavor, how much we get result from our endeavor? And the second is different devotees will have different standards. Someone can live in a hut, someone has to live in a palace. So how do we understand where that balance is? So basically, the principle is that one has to work according to one's nature. Prabhupada mentions, I think it's in the 11th canto, that the perfection of duties is that we do our duty according to our nature for the Lord. So if we do our duty for the Lord, that is dharma. And if we don't do that, our duty for the Lord, that is called adharma. So even if you follow our nature, but it's not for the Lord, then according to the path of Bhagavad Dharma, this is adharma. So Prabhupada mentioned that the devotees should be willing to work as hard as the karmis. Yes, we have to be willing to work. What is according to our nature? Fully. Srila Prabhupada pointed out, we have to take care of our spiritual development. So that means we have to chant, we have to read, we have to associate with devotees, attend the programs. And in the balance time, we should use that to do something practical for Krishna. And then, it is up to Krishna what he wants to give. Because Krishna knows us the best. We remember this life. We don't remember the other lifetime. So how certain desires have come, we don't know. So then Krishna knows how to break those desires. So he will act in such a way that he will fulfill the desires but at the same time remove them. So in this regard, Prabhupada mentions he is known as Hari. So he says Hari with 10 hands. If he wants, he can take everything away. We have 2 hands, what you'll do against 10 hands. If he wants to give with 10 hands, how much he can give. That in the spiritual realm, there's no shortage of opulence. So when Krishna is pleased, naturally Lakshmi likes to provide. But sometimes if our mentality is not correct, sometimes Krishna will not give. Like Baliraj, he had the whole universe. It took everything away. And he did nothing wrong. He got control of the universe by proper worship of his guru. And Indra lost the kingdom because he offended his guru. And Bali Maharaj appreciated the beauty and the effulgence of Vamanadev. He, as a good king, he was giving charity to the Brahmins. And Vamanadev asked for 3 steps. And he said, "You're so small, your 3 steps would be so little. Take more." And so he did everything very nicely. But then after Krishna tricked him and took the whole universe in 2 steps, then when he saw that he couldn't provide the 3rd step, then he captured him, he bound him with the ropes of Varuna, he insulted him. And so then then a discussion started at that point. And Bali Maharaj pointed out that, yes, it is by the Lord's grace that everything is taken away and we lose our attachments. And then that was spoken by Bali Maharaj. And then Vamanadev, he made another point. That it is only by the Lord's grace, of course, that he takes everything away. So, but even more wonderful is when Krishna gives and the devotee does not become proud. Means that's why humbler than a blade of grass. If you have nothing, it's easy to be humble. But if you have everything, then it's a little more difficult. And we see in the lives of the acharyas, it's not that this function only happens to us. Prabhupada, he, as a grihastha, he lost everything. Then, when he was vanaprastha in India, he still could get nothing. And then when he went to America, whatever little he had gained, he also lost that. Then after that, then Krishna gave so much. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was born in a very aristocratic and wealthy family. Yeah. But by 12 years old, everything was lost and he was out on the street. And we see the other acharyas, they also, similar, they lost everything. Narottam Das Thakur, he also lost. Everybody lost. So they're not complaining. So next we have to learn how Krishna works. It means we're working for Krishna, so we should know how he works. Prabhupada points out that if we cannot, something happens and we cannot find what is the cause for it, understand that Krishna is the cause because he's the ultimate cause of everything. And use this as a means to surrender. So therefore we work, and whether we get or we don't get, we must stay surrendered to Krishna. Means if things are coming, Krishna is pleased. If things are not coming, Krishna is trying to tell us something. But in either case, it is his mercy. He's not overly worried. He'll just leave it to the modes of nature to take care. But because he cares, therefore he gets involved. Because he knows the whole scene. Mother may be feeding so many things to the child. But if the child is sick, there may be some restriction in what they get to eat. Now, the child may think, what's going on? My mother doesn't like me anymore. But it's actually because she likes the child that she's doing this. If she didn't like, she'd let him eat anything. Who cares? So like that, we have to see that it is Krishna who's in control. So then, a side point of... Yeah. So then with this, we work, and then what comes, we are happy with. As Krishna pointed out to Arjuna, yes, you can leave the battlefield, go to the forest, but because your nature is to fight, you'll get into a fight in the forest. Arjuna spent a huge amount of time. He went 12 years to the forest on his own, then 12 years, 13 years with his brothers, and they grew up in the forest. And so many fights were happening there. Except for the battle of Kurukshetra, every fight he had all happened in the forest. Therefore, Krishna said, yes, you go to the forest, but I'll be laughing because you'll be fighting there. Therefore, someone must work according to their nature. But it's not whether we do it for Krishna or whether we don't. Then, on the second point, is then we have to see what comes easily, that is how we have to live. Means, what is our means and what is our desire, we have to bring them next to each other. So it's recommended that one keeps one's desire lower than what one receives. Because this satisfaction of having more or less is basically just the mind. A little bit more, when we get that little bit more, we want more than that. So like that it goes on. So it's just very much individual according to one's own mind. So basically what comes easily, take that, live with that to what, how one is comfortable. And we find it's less than what we are happy, then maybe Krishna is trying to point out something. Because Krishna is happy to give so much due to some difficulty either in our mentality or something, maybe Krishna is restricting. Because one of the six duties of the Brahmana is to give in charity. And he receives pratigraha and he gives dana. Means, like we read in the scriptures, that this king gave each Brahmin 10,000 cows. Right. What will the Brahmin do with 10,000 cows? For the practice that Rupa Goswami gave is whatever you get, you give some of that away and then you live on less than that. Because then that gives us that, we purify by that charity and we learn to live at a more simple level, whatever it is. So in this way we see what Krishna gives and then according to that we live. We may make a plan, we may endeavor, but if it doesn't work like that, then we take it as the Lord's arrangement and then live according to that. Then life becomes easy. The man is working hard, bringing many things, basically because he wants to please the wife and family. Basically the man is, you know, very simple, sleep in a corner somewhere, nice dirty corner, you know, roll his cloth up, throw it in the other corner, and, you know, that's it. Close the door, no one bothers him, take some rest, read a little, finished. To please the family, then he'll work hard, bring so many things and all that. Therefore, the principle for the girls that they be are satisfied with whatever comes easily, then maintains this principle of charity. Because if the relationship is pleasant between the husband and wife, the wife keeps asking why the husband will not give. So this principle of being able to live according to one's means, give in charity, and, you know, keep the mind peaceful on this area, then is dependent upon that peacefulness of the wife. And even if we see that a man is very interested in having, you know, big place and all kinds of wealth and facilities, that's generally to attract a woman. To show that he is actually able to provide, that he is a shelter, he's strong. But otherwise, on his own, then, you know, very simple. Man is very simple. So that sensitivity is very important to be there on both sides. What is the actual happiness that one is gaining in those first short time of association between the man and the woman? It is the sensitivity that each one is having towards each other. Careful, what does the woman want, how will they go, this, that, do we sit here, do we not, do we this, that, and the woman is doing the same thing. Because in the beginning, each one is being very careful to be sensitive to the others and try to not disturb the other. So, and that creates that working mood, that everything will go nice, everything will eternally be wonderful. And of course, that is assisted by the hormonal experience that is happening. And of course, within a few months, those go away. Thinking that that is the cause. We think that is love. It means love was just some hormones. Means between the living entities, then you have what's called sthayibhav. All these sthayibhav and all these anubhav, vyabhachari bhavs, all these happen between in the spiritual realm, between Krishna and his devotees. But in the material world, then we don't have this love. It's based on the desire to get some sense gratification. So when we think we're going to get something, here looks like the person I can get that with, then, you know, the hairs stand on end, you know, then, you know, one becomes devastated and all kinds of interesting things. Yes, so much poetry is spoken, the whole world becomes beautiful. But after 6 months, somehow or another, mysteriously, then we become used to that. The adrenaline is not there anymore. The hormones go back to their normal work. And then we are stuck with, who is this person? Then, so then, look proper anymore. One wonders what's wrong here. It's the other person, must be. But the actual thing in the practical, that was just some emotional experience. But the main thing, or not even emotional, it's physical. But what was the actual emotional thing was the sensitivity to the other person's thinking, movements, desires. Hmm. So if one can understand that, once trained in that, that can go for the rest of the life. So that doesn't disappear after 6 months. So that's based on duty. And natural, and then naturally by working together, attachment develops. So the sooner we understand this, then the sooner things work properly. So that principle, it's very, very important. Just like Prabhupada said, is our philosophy is very simple. We're servants of Krishna, you chant Hare Krishna, you go back to Krishna. Philosophy is very deep. So in the same way, principles of culture are very simple. But from that principle, so much detail is there. So you have to be very expert to understand what is principle, what is detail. It's generally what happens, why it's very hard to apply the culture, is because we'll take a principle as a detail or a detail as a principle. This place is circumcised, just like chant 16 rounds. That is the principle.
Methods, you can say this one.
Yeah.
And another one.
See, and then how we'll chant that. We chant it in the temple, we chant it on the road, we chant it on the bus to Calcutta. That may be different. But the principle of chanting 16 rounds always remains. Huh? Is that now clear?
The methods for application.
Yes, methods of application and the what you're applying.
The principles.
Yes, so we have to know what principles are and then become expert because we know what the principle is for to apply it in all the different times and place circumstances. So if we can develop that, then it becomes much more easy. Then, yes.
Like you mentioned about the Naishthika Brahmachari vows.
Mention?
About the Naishthika Brahmachari.
Huh.
Now, somebody wants to come to that stage of being Naishthika Brahmachari. So how? What is the procedure? Or what is the process? The simplest process to achieve that position.
Okay. The question is that. We've described about the brahmachari, the brahmacharini who wish to get married. What about those who don't want to get married? For the naistika. So basic principle is brahmachari means student. As a brahmachari means we have to always maintain that attitude. So a student is always submissive. He always is working for the benefit of the guru and the ashram. He's always living simple, always trying to control the senses, and not interested in trying to establish himself or, you know, have some position, some prestige, some facility from that. It means na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim. So that's why it said a brahmachari, if he's rightly situated, already is 50% of the way back to Godhead. He's already started at that shloka. Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, kavitam va jagadisha kame. Because that shloka is the middle of the nine levels, that's right at the middle. Means you have Shraddha, Sadhu, Sangha, Bhajana, Kriya, so that mood is the middle. therefore 50%. So that means that therefore the brahmacharis are respected by the society and they're valued because of their position of advancement. That's why we say it's not the orange club. Just because you put on orange doesn't mean 50% now is completed. It's a mentality. So therefore, to maintain this mentality, we can see there cannot be politics, there cannot be fighting over facilities, there cannot be trying to establish oneself as the most prominent and most wonderful. Yes, no rajniti.
Politics.
Yes. So in other words, basically you have to surrender today, not tomorrow, today. The path of surrendering fully tomorrow, that is the path of the grihastha. Huh. So therefore, the naistika brahmacharya is a very special position. So we have to understand that so we don't make fools out of ourselves. Like now, what talks go around the brahmacharya ashram today? You look at them, you'll see that they're dealing with either dhanam, janam, or sundarim. The mess is that, is the brahmachari dharma is not being followed. So it's a mentality, it's not the look, as we described about the top of the line second class brahmachari that we discussed the other day. See, the padati for the naistika brahmachari, the padati for the sannyas, these are very simple because it's just a matter of hear these things, you surrender right now, and fine. I think it's 13 shlokas Narad Muni describes the brahmachari.
13 shlokas?
Yeah, 13 shlokas. It's 8th canto? 7th canto. Starting with the shloka brahmachari guru kule, basanta danta guror hitam. With that shloka. It's the first shloka of that chapter. Very simply described, right? But now, if one can't do that, then Krishna gives that process, how you can surrender. And that's by going properly through the grihastha ashram, those same qualities will come. So for the honest devotee, or the sincere devotee, he doesn't care whether you get it today or you get it tomorrow, as long as you're getting it. Because when you have those qualities, you go back to Godhead. Like that. So the brahmacharis, they have no problem if somebody wants to get married because they're getting married to get those qualities. And the grihasthas have no problem with the brahmacharis because they know that they are in the process of either getting those qualities or preparing to go through the grihastha ashram. Then the social system functions.
Then we can fall down from offenses.
There is the possibility from being a naistika brahmachari or being a good grihastha that one due to offenses can fall from that platform. Therefore the devotee always keeps the devotional path, the devotional process as most prominent in his life, and then that is supported by his duties within the social culture.
You said that Naistika Brahmachari, this means that Grihastha Brahmachari, he shouldn't maintain this mood.
Yes. He's saying that the brahmachari, the naistika brahmachari, he has to work on that platform, na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim. So what about the grihastha brahmachari? He shouldn't also maintain that. It's just the principle is one who can remain as a naistika brahmachari, that realization has come. While for the grihastha brahmachari, he understands it and he's trying to situate himself in that. That's why there's not so much distinction is made. The point is everyone should take the medicine that they need for their particular disease. So we must be honest enough to know what is our medicine, and we must be broad-minded enough to accept others' needs and their medicine. Yes.
On the level of consciousness, the ashram is a level of consciousness, our mentality.
Mm.
So it appears that Nitya is actually already situated in a particular ashram. Now, if we realize ourselves where we're at the moment, then we'll understand exactly what ashram we're in. But what is that, right? But what part does choice play in this? That I can choose my own ashram, or I can think which ashram I want to enter, because actually the ashram is already there according to your nature. And can you change your nature, or what choices?
Oh, I see. Pankajangri Prabhu is making the point is that by nature, by our conditioned nature, we'll be situated in a particular ashram anyway. So is it a matter of our choice, or is it a matter of, you know, what determines that?
Can we change?
Oh, can we change that? And there was something more?
Can we change our nature?
Yeah, at the present moment. So if we understand what ashram we're actually in, but we say you want, I prefer to be a Naisik Brahmachari, but I actually understand that's not a position, but I want to go for it anyway, something like that.
So the basically nature is there, but if we can try to accelerate the process, we can try to make the process go quicker. But just as we were discussing before, the grihastha, he makes his endeavor, he has his plans, but he has to see what Krishna's, you know, desire is we can make that endeavor, and if we get the result, then fine. But if we're not getting the result, then we have to accept the reality. So the Prabhupada always says we should shoot the rhinoceros. So we always try for the top. So no one can shoot a rhinoceros. So if we fail, then no one can complain, because no one can do it. But if we do it, then everyone will go, this is very special. But if we don't, no one will complain. If we keep that as goal, then we're always endeavoring. There's always some fresh inspiration. We should never think, I cannot do it. Because no living entity belongs here. Everybody belongs in the spiritual realm. So everybody can go back to Godhead. So we just try our best and depend upon Krishna. In this mood, we can associate with the devotees and then share our realizations, share, you know, what we've done, what was the results that we have gotten. Then things go nicely. Because realization is realization. It is good for everybody. What is your question? Oh, yeah.
This is on the same point. The brahmachari, he is trying, like you said, endeavoring to remain a brahmachari, aspiring for this Ashtic Brahmachari level. What are the ways in which he can see, like you say, well, he's not working. How do you see that? How can a brahmachari understand that this is not working? I am endeavoring, because he may think that, well, I should do it this way. If I do it, maybe I'm not doing this enough, or I'm not doing that enough, or I'll change this, or I'll change that, and then it will work. So at what point, and how does he understand that I'm actually, this is not working, I should go for the simpler process?
And how long he should take to do that?
How long he should take to do that? He go for 10 years, 15 years, and then he decides, or you know, 50 years old, he says, well, I can't make it, and now let me find a 20-year-old wife.
Well, that happened with Saubari Muni. He was already an old wrinkle, you know.
That time he was 60,000 years old.
Yeah, only 60,000 years old. Then he went to the king and said, I would like to marry your daughters, all 100 of them. And then the girls laughed at him because he was such an old man. And then he thought, okay, I'll show you. He went out and then became, his mystic powers became a beautiful young man. Then he came back.